Council. And our next case, United States versus Williams.
No relation.
No relations.
May it please the court.
Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joanna Christensen, and I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. I represent the appellant, Amon Williams, in this case. With the court's indulgence, I will focus today on the fourth prong of plain error in reference to the Booker case and leave the other arguments to the briefs as they are stated. Believing that this, of course, is the most important issue of the day and of the week, as it were. In Mr. Williams' case, we have conceded after Booker that there is no Sixth Amendment violation as conceived in the first opinion in Booker, but it remains to be seen what the remedy is in this particular case. We have also conceded that plain error applies in this case because he did not raise the issue below. And just as the court discussed in the last argument, the issue here really is that the district court did not have the ability or even the knowledge that it could sentence Mr. Williams considering the factors in 3553A.
Well, here the district court sentenced him, though, to the high end of the sentencing guideline range pre-Booker. Why would we think that the district court, upon remand and considering the guidelines as advisory, would give Williams any less of a sentence?
I believe, Your Honor, is because Judge Shabazz did not have the opportunity, and certainly did not. The record is devoid of considering anything other than the offense and Mr. Williams' criminal history. And both of those are still proper. We're certainly not arguing that he will not be allowed to consider those, but could not consider things that are in 3553A, such as retribution and protecting the public and Mr. Williams' educational needs. Mr. Williams has only completed the eighth grade. He has significant mental health issues. None of that was considered by the district court because it had been previously forbidden by the guidelines to consider things like the defendant's age and his upbringing and his socioeconomic status.
So you didn't even file a motion for downward departure on those factors?
I was not trial counsel, Your Honor.
Well, trial counsel did not.
One was not filed.
Mm-hmm.
No. And I believe it was simply precluded by the guidelines. Any of us who have been practicing in guidelines regime knew that in a case like Mr. Williams, a very sad situation, who was not yet 20 when he committed this offense, had a very rough upbringing, a lack of a father figure who had been in prison his entire life, we were not able to bring those issues to the forefront and actually argue them as part of any sentencing package. We were really, as defense counsel, like the court, constrained by the guidelines. That is no longer the case. And given the situation as it is, we believe that this case should be remanded for resentencing to allow Judge Shabazz to exercise the discretion as it is contemplated by Booker. Of course, this court is more than aware that most circuit courts are starting to issue opinions about Booker and how it affects various combinations of preserved error and non-preserved error. Of course, we agree with the courts that have found that it is plain error and is reversible under plain error. The government agrees with the one court, I believe, who has found it is not, which is the 11th Circuit. I think our only common ground is that we may disagree with the Second Circuit in Crosby as to sending back to the district court to determine whether resentencing is necessary. I don't believe that that's the appropriate stance under Booker. I don't think that's what the justices had in mind for reviewing courts in this situation. We would also note that particularly the Hughes Court in the Fourth Circuit has found that even without a Sixth Amendment error, as in this case, plain error may still be satisfied and the case may still be remanded for resentencing because the defendant was sentenced under the mandatory sentencing regime. And unless the court has further questions, I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Good
For the record, in this case, I'm still John Vaudrey. I'm still in the attorney's office in Madison. I would like to cut to the chase. It's the government's position that Mr. Williams has failed to establish the third and the fourth prong of the plain error analysis. We certainly agree with the federal defender that plain error review is appropriate here. I know the address was on the fourth prong, but I don't think we can get to that. And I think the third prong is important. And I think not just for this case, but for this court's analysis of these cases, I would suggest sort of how I analyze it at least. I think if the defendant is correct in this case, that each defendant who comes before the court will have satisfied the third prong. And this is what I mean by that. As I see it, at least, there's probably three situations, factual patterns, that can come before this court and probably have, by listening to yesterday's arguments or as any indication. First, we've got a judge who would be silent and simply sentence perhaps in the middle of the range, perhaps at the low end of the range, but doesn't say anything other than that sentence. And we're left with the quandary of whether that means the judge would do something different for that third prong. Would it affect the substantial rights? It is the department's position, certainly, and the 11th Circuit seems to agree in Rodriguez, that if we aren't sure, if the court doesn't know, then the defendant hasn't satisfied his burden. That's the government's position. The second scenario which could occur is the judge who makes it very clear that he or she wants to go lower. And I actually can't think of any times it's happened with Judge Shabazz, but with Judge Crabb, in many instances that I've been in front of her, she's said, the guidelines are draconian. I would give you a much lower sentence if I could, but
it's difficult to draft an order that takes into account the attitude of the trial judge on the legislation itself.
Well, I'm not asking the court to take judicial notice of any.
Well, we already do, but go ahead. It's not judicial notice, but it's individual notice.
Well, I think that's probably true, although I'm not asking the court to turn off, like, the recording device. With Judge Krebs, she's made those statements, so she could fit into that second category. And, in fact, in a case that one of my colleagues will be arguing tomorrow, I believe Bothan, from Judge Krebs, she said those things, and we are taking the position that the third prong is satisfied. So in that second scenario that the court will be confronted by, a judge who says, I wish I could go lower, but I can't, the third prong. Now, that doesn't mean the fourth prong is satisfied, but the third prong would be. The situation in this specific case, Mr. Williams' case, is what I will categorize as the third category, which is a judge who makes it very clear by sentencing at the high end of the range and by what he said during sentencing that he would not go lower. In fact, although not articulated, one could certainly read into this that had there not been guidelines, mandatory guidelines, he might have sentenced Mr. Williams even higher.
But like you said, you're reading into that, because what she's really arguing is under the new scheme, the district court can take into account various factors, right, like those factors she pointed out. And, under the pre-Booker, the court couldn't consider that. Why is it fair to the defendant, or why shouldn't the defendant have the opportunity to present that to the district court judge?
I think the answer is twofold, Your Honor. First, just as a general matter, while the court could not consider age, family situation, things like that, for either a departure or setting the range itself, nothing really precluded the court from considering those things in deciding where to sentence somebody within the range. This was a fairly large range, 92 to 115 months, not as big as some at the top end of the range. But the court could consider those things in sentencing between 115 and 92 months. Could not depart downward on that basis. But so as a legal matter, I don't think it's quite accurate to say that the court couldn't consider them, but for specific purposes could consider them. In this specific case, all of the mitigating factors set out in the supplemental briefs were set out in the PSR, the bad upbringing, the gang family, the Peystone Rangers, the Blacks Peystone Nation, the whole gamut of problems here. Trial counsel for the defendant asked for the low end of that range based essentially on those factors, argued based on his age, his history of mental illness, his history of medication, recognizing that that was not available for departure, but asking the court to recognize those things for sentencing at the low end of the range. Judge Shabazz, in the exercise of his discretion, chose not to acknowledge or not to accept those arguments, if you will, and really look more at the aggravating factors. He did specifically address the 3553 factors. He said, I want to impose this 115 months to, you know, for general specific deterrence, to hold you accountable, protect the community, give you some structure so hopefully you can get on with a law-abiding life. And he went through the aggravating factors, which is the flip side of his age, which is by 21 he was already criminal history 6 with a couple of violent batteries, an aggravated use of a firearm, and some other things. So I think what really happened here is that the facts were all brought to the judge's attention in the PSR. It was brought to his attention that he could use those factors, at least the age and the mental health issues, to sentence at a lower part of the range. Judge Shabazz rejected that. He said, and I guess in terms of his feeling at least, he said anything less than the maximum would be a dereliction of his duty. So I think in this case we do know that the judge was given an opportunity to consider those factors within the range and chose not to. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, by presenting it to him again, is there a possibility he would think differently? I suppose. But I think under plain error, some things do appear ultimately as unfair. But it is plain error review, and the defendant does have the burden to say, essentially, this affects my rights, it's going to be different. And in this third category, where a judge, I think, has made it quite clear after all these facts were in the PSR and brought to his attention that he's not going anywhere but the high end, I think that that the third prong isn't satisfied. It might be different if what we were talking about today was one of those other categories, the silent judge, low end of the range, or the judge who's spoken about wanting to go lower. Certainly many of the circuits are weighing in on what the government or how the court should review this prong, given the court can see in the 28J filings that both the federal defender and my office submitted. But in this specific situation, I think some of those, they are, while helpful perhaps, not as instructive, because in this case, we do not have the silent judge. We do not have the judge who says, I want to go lower. We've got the judge, as I've said now 10 times, I suppose, who I think has made it clear he does not want to go lower. There was an uncontested range. He chose the high end of the range. And I think on that basis, there's not been that satisfaction of the third prong.
And so why do you think the way the Fourth Circuit went is not advisable in this situation? Because that certainly is a fairer, cleaner approach, right, to dealing with these violations when everyone thought, all the judges felt, we were bound by those guidelines. And the judge may come to the sentencing with a different headset or a different perspective now that they are just advisory.
The short answer is that that's not the position of the Department of Justice. Whatever I might personally feel, I can't really disagree with your instinct that let's send these things back and let the judge say the same thing or not say the same thing. Mm-hmm. As a matter of law, however, it continues to be our position, certainly in the facts of this case, that this court can make the decision that in these specific facts, that prong has not been satisfied because of all those things I've already repeated ad nauseum, I suspect.
All right. Thank you. Anything else, Ms. Christensen? And how much time? 5 minutes.
I'll just address a few of the government's comments. Regarding the third prong, every court of appeals that's considered the issue, including the 11th Circuit in Rodriguez, has found that the third prong has been satisfied. It's been the fourth prong that's really taken most of the analysis. Secondly, I believe that the government's position that we don't know if the district court would have done something differently is exactly the reason the district court needs to make the discretionary decision. Other circuits have noted in Hughes and then the 10th Circuit in La Bastida, I believe I'm saying that correctly, have said that this court cannot substitute its own judgment for the district court's discretion and should not enter the zone, as the 10th Circuit said, of speculation and conjecture into that discretionary area.
I relate to the defense of counsel. I think what he said was that we don't know, and it's your burden to tell us. Not his.
I believe it is our burden to tell, and I'm saying that we...
What you're saying is if you don't know and he doesn't know, then we have to send it back.
I don't think,
if the record doesn't show that.
I think, frankly, nobody knows. I don't even know if Judge Shabazz knows at this point what he would have done with this case had it been, if Mr. Williams had been sentenced.
I bet you could make a great educated guess, couldn't you?
I'm sorry?
I said, I bet you could make a great educated guess, though, couldn't you?
I bet I could. But I think that we should give district court judges, including district court judges in general, the benefit of the doubt and allow them to exercise this newfound discretion that perhaps some of them have not been able to do.
Let me inquire, is there any possibility that the sentence, if he were exercising his unfettered discretion based on the advice, that he could raise the imposition of the sentence, increase it?
This has been discussed thoroughly. I don't know if there are any cases. I believe there's a possibility. I also believe that there.
So that's a risk you're willing to take. Your client's willing to take.
We have discussed that possibility.
I
also
sure
believe there are arguments strongly against that.
Oh, listen, we're discussing possibilities now, not
right.
Absolutes, right?
Well, we have to consider all possibilities. I think that until the Booker case shakes out. However many months that may take, we need to cover
years.
All of our years. The other, I would also like to disagree with the government's position, and maybe even he is in fact disagreeing with himself, that this is based on a policy of the Department of Justice rather than an individual defendant sentencing decision. And of course, I think that's a factor of me being on one side of this issue and him being on the other side. We're always going to disagree about that. But Mr. Williams is an individual, and I don't think that his decision should be based on a Department of Justice policy to cover all possible defendants. I know that in every case that I have, it is not possible to have an across-the-board policy about these cases.
I think what he said was the Department of Justice has taken a position on a subject that should be argued in every case in which this issue comes up.
Yes.
And that again is what the policy of the Department of Justice, and he represents it, he works for him.
I agree with that, and he probably advisedly could not take a different position. However, I do disagree with the position and the way it has affected particularly Mr. Williams in this case. And therefore, unless there are any further questions, I urge this court to recognize the plain error and remand this case for resentencing.
Thank you.
Thank
case
you.
Will be taken under advisement. Thanks to both counsel.